You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Are you feeling stressed about money? Well, if so, it's not a great feeling, but according to new research, you're not alone.
A recent study from the American Psychological Association dug into what's stressing out Americans. Nearly three-quarters of those surveyed said they had stressed about money at some point in the last month. More than a quarter said they are stressed out about money most or all of the time. That's leading to some serious consequences, even things like adverse health effects.
The CEO of the American Psychological Association says that all Americans need to do to address the issue sooner or later in order to better their health and their well-being. But when it comes to money, where do you start?
Joining us now is Lynette Kalfani-Cox. She's the CEO and co-founder of themoneycoach.net. She's a former financial news journalist and the author of several books on money matters. Lynette, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good to be back again.
Well, since that big recession, the economy has rebounded a fair amount, but according to the study, we're still pretty stressed out about money. So how big of an issue do you see this here in 2015?
I think financial stress is a huge problem for most Americans all across the board. And I know the APA study looked at, you know, both higher income respondents as well as lower income folks who were surveyed. But I would argue that all groups stress about money, whether that's low income, moderate or middle income folks, or even high net worth individuals who stress more about sort of keeping and maintaining their wealth. And so I really do think it's a very, very pervasive problem in America.
Money's a pretty fundamental thing. Do you see it as something that gets tangled up in all the other forms of stress, maybe even as a root cause of some of the other stuff?
I would say it is, in fact, a root cause, certainly of family stress and relationship stress. I mean, when you think about it, 7 out of 10 couples who divorce actually cite financial strife as one of the causes for the breakup. We certainly know that there are clear links to financial anxiety and physical illnesses and not, you know, feeling well. I was on Dr. Oz, as a matter of fact, last year talking about this, a concept called MAD, money anxiety disorder, because when you're stressed out about finances, you tend to get more headaches. You feel that, you know, stressful feeling in the pit of your stomach, sleepless nights, anxiety. For some people, it leads to ulcers, worrying. So we know there are, in fact, physical as well as psychological, emotional, and relationship-based links when you have financial stress as well.
Well, I know you want us, as the money coach, to think about our money seriously, take it seriously, do things about it, take steps. But how do we draw the line between thinking about this issue and tackling it and obsessing about it, feeling stressed about it all the time?
Well, I think you have to recognize the things that you have control over and then acknowledge the things that you, frankly, have absolutely no control over. So you could stress about any number of financial matters. You can think about, my house is underwater, you know, because the balance of my mortgage is now greater than the amount that the house is worth. But you have absolutely no control over real estate values. You can, you know, keep your house up and not, you know, let it get, you know, worn down, you know, unduly, but you really can't control local real estate values. Ditto for the stock market. You know, I think a lot of people tend to have a lot of anxiety when they watch and see, okay, the Dow was up 100 points yesterday, down 10 points today, and so the vicissitudes of the stock market, those vagaries alone can make people feel, you know, very much out of sorts and very stressed. So, you know, step one is sort of try not to have anxiety about things that are absolutely out of your control, because you can't do anything about them anyway. Step two is to sort of identify your stressors and really think about what causes you the most amount of emotional insecurity when it comes to your finances. Are you worried primarily, for instance, about today? So a lot of people say, I'm worried about paying my rent or my mortgage. I have credit card bills to pay. I've got to keep the, you know, the gas and the utilities on. Those are, of course, present day financial concerns. But then a lot of people worry tremendously about the future. So they might have kids and they're thinking, how in the world will I be able to foot the college bills down the road? How will I be able to, you know, have a secure retirement? Those are the things that you can diminish your stress tremendously by just taking bite-sized steps and doing a little bit at a time. So the progress you make, for example, towards saving for retirement will diminish your anxiety and stress about an event that's going to take place, say, 15 or 20 years down the road.
I want to talk a little bit about some numbers from the survey. It found that 12% of respondents said they skipped a doctor's visit because of financial concerns. 32% said their finances prevented them from living a healthy lifestyle. And I wonder if some of the stress about money is just something that we can't do anything about because we have our income is what it is. We can't just have more money because we want to have more money. Is some of this just powerlessness about how much money we have?
Well, I think that that might be sort of an easy sort of default position to take and to sort of say and accept, you know, it is what it is and you're not going to make above X. This is your salary. But there are some things that you can do. Certainly, if you're making a very modest salary, then one of the challenges is, of course, to live within your means, right? So, yes, if you sit up and watch reality TV all day and then you have aspirations to live like the bling-bling lifestyle like you might see on television, or if you're constantly comparing yourself to what your neighbor has, or if you're trying to, you know, get the latest and greatest of anything, the newest car model, the most recent tech gadgets, et cetera, then you're actually making choices, right, that are going to potentially cause you to feel financial stress and to be financially stressed because you don't have the economic resources to support that kind of lifestyle. Nor is it, in many cases, frankly, very desirable or at least advisable. So part of it is if you are feeling cash-strapped and like you're living paycheck to paycheck, one step is to certainly evaluate the choices you've been making. Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of people who live on very modest salaries who actually don't feel so cash-strapped all the time. I was reading about a janitor just yesterday who retired and passed away and left $8 million to colleges and various charities. Nobody even knew this guy was a multimillionaire, but he had a very modest salary. And, but over the course of a lifetime, he had been a diligent saver, and he'd been a person who, you know, had humble roots and sort of stayed true to that. So even if you feel like, I only make X annually or X per hour, part of the challenge to not feel financially stressed is to align your spending patterns and your choices in terms of what you're doing with your money with your true goals. So if you say family is important to me, for example, then it shouldn't be about spending on the latest pair of tennis shoes or a purse or a bag or, you know, the latest iPhone. Maybe you want to make smarter choices and say, I'm going to spend time with the family. So instead of buying all these things, all this stuff throughout the course of a year, maybe I'll save up money to have less stress and to be able to take a week's vacation with the family. So this way you get the dual benefit of that. You get to relieve some stress by having a little bit of downtime, but you also get the sort of family togetherness. But it's about planning and making choices. And again, not necessarily saying, I'm going to follow the herd or I'm going to do what everyone else is doing.
Now, a lot of times money is one of those things that we don't talk about, a bit of a taboo topic. Do you think that because we don't maybe talk about our financial stress or financial troubles, that makes it all the more stressful?
I do, because I think in a lot of ways, a lot of people who have financial troubles feel like they're alone. They typically beat themselves up, right? And they feel like, how could I have been so foolish or I got myself into this mess, and I'm the one that has to get myself out. You have to sort of, you know, feel like you have to financially pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And there's a lot of research that also backs that up. Fidelity, I know, came out with a new survey recently that talked about the extent to which women in particular will discuss a whole range of things, their weight, sex, et cetera. But when it came to money issues, they were not so keen on talking about, say, salary issues, spending habits, you know, and things related to money. So it is the case that, you know, sort of culturally, I think that for a lot of people, it's not deemed to be proper, let's say, to talk about money. Some people consider it kind of tacky or gauche, or they just sort of think that if I talk about money, I don't want it to seem like I'm bragging if they're doing well, nor are people who might be, say, dating, and we're coming up, you know, on Valentine's Day very shortly. Some people are thinking, should I have the money talk with my significant other? No, maybe not. I don't want to seem like a gold digger, or I don't want to, you know, taint the romance by introducing, you know, finance. So, you know, but we do have to get comfortable with it. We do have to be willing to have these conversations. And even, you know, a lot of us have to be willing to share our own mistakes and our setbacks, because it does tend to open up conversation, and it lets others know we're not perfect. Nobody is. We've all had our challenges, but this is a way that you can learn from it by talking to other people about what they've done that has worked and what they've done that wasn't so good and so positive or productive.
Whether it's a taboo topic or not, we're talking with Lynette Kalfani-Cox about money and stress. A recent survey from the American Psychological Association finds that the vast majority of Americans are stressed about their finances. We want to hear from you on this.
How stressed are you about money? Is that stress affecting your personal life, maybe your relationships or your health? And what do you do to try to manage your financial stress? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about money and stress. According to a new survey, it's the number one thing that's stressing Americans out. So we're taking a look at what that stress is doing to us and how to manage it. And we want to hear from you on this.
How would you describe your personal level of stress when it comes to money issues? Is it affecting your personal life, your relationships, or your health? How do you cope? And do you have advice on maybe how you dealt with an issue financially or emotionally? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Our guest is Lynette Kalfani-Cox. She's the CEO and co-founder of themoneycoach.net. And we go to our first caller now. We've got Andy with us in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I guess I'm a relatively young person, 26 years old, and there are certainly a lot of money stresses. I went to college, so I do have some student loans that I'm paying back, trying to get them out of the way as soon as I can. So. Also, utilities, I mean, you know, things that everyday people worry about. So there's just a lot out there, got to tell you.
Right. Well, thanks so much for sharing that, Andy. Appreciate it. And Lynette, you know, Andy has got a lot of people in his boat dealing with student loans.
Sure.
And then just the cost of living and, you know, transitioning from college into a professional life, too.
That's right. You know, Andy, he said he's 26. He's in that millennial category where, you know, their number one concern is about debt. And so, you know, obviously a huge financial problem. Student loan debt is at $1.2 trillion in America. So, you know, the typical college grad had, from the class of 2014, had about $33,000 in student loans. He didn't say what his are, but, you know, it's taking, you know, on average 10-plus years for most college grads to pay back their loans. And in many cases, it's two decades. So that's a very, very real concern for a lot of folks in their 20s. And you pointed out, Veronica, a very good consideration as well. They're transitioning, right? So they're going from the college environment or perhaps living with mom and dad to making a way on their own and living in, quote-unquote, the real world. So that's the point in their life at which they have to first really effectively learn how to juggle bills, how to manage a budget, how to keep the checking account from getting overdrawn, how to, you know when to say yes, that they can go out with their friends, or no, they need to stay home, because all of those bills that a lot of 30-something, 40-something, and 50-something people have been navigating perhaps for a couple decades are now sort of suddenly being thrust upon them. Not to mention, because of the job market, a lot of recent college grads have to relocate. So if they can't necessarily get a job in their own backyard, wherever they went to school, they have to go to another city. And so that brings the attendant costs along with it as well. So it's a very, very real challenge.
Andy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Lynette, any advice to get started on dealing with that challenge, that incomprehensible number that is your student loan debt, say?
Yes. The first thing is to sort of know what all of your financial options are when it comes to repayment. And certainly if you had federal loans, you have four different options. The first is to just put yourself in the standard loan repayment program. That's where you pay off your loans in 10 years. But there are three other repayment plans as well if you just can't swing your student loan repayments. There's the graduated loan repayment program, the extended loan repayment program, and the income contingent or income sensitive loan repayment options. In a nutshell, all of those will allow you to extend your loan repayments to as short as 12 years or as long as 25 and in some cases 30 years. Now, I know that sounds like putting a mortgage on your back, and there is a trade-off. If you want to have smaller loan repayments for that college debt right now while you're just sort of getting started, you can do that by extending your student loan repayments. But, of course, you'll pay more in the long run in terms of interest because you're extending and stretching those loan payments out. But for some people, in the short run, just while they get their, you know, bearings financially, or while they work up to a higher paying gig and a bigger salary, it's sort of worth it to consolidate or extend out some of those student loan options. Ditto with checking if you have private student loans. You might want to inquire with your lender about various options. If you need a forbearance or a deferment, if you're unemployed, there's options available just to keep you out of delinquency or default status.
Well, good luck to Andy, and we're going to go next to Jenny in West Salem. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I just tuned in a few minutes ago, and I was really interested in your conversation. A gift that was given to us early in my marriage with my husband, which is going on 17 years ago, is we were invited over to my in-laws' house where they were meeting with their financial advisor. So we were in our early 20s, and we got started with a financial advisor who we continue to meet with twice a year, and we learned how to create a savings account and build that savings. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jenny. That's an interesting gift. I bet a lot of people don't get that.
That is so awesome. What a great gift. I mean, I don't know. She said with her in-laws, so I'm not sure if the in-laws themselves provided the gift, but wow, that probably helped to keep them married for these 17 years. I mean, to get them started on the right financial footing.
So is that a good idea, going to a financial planner when you're feeling that stress?
I really do think it is. You know, a lot of very wealthy people will tell you that they have financial advisors, and in fact, they have a team of advisors typically. Now, I'll tell you what low income and middle Americans will usually say to that. They'll say, I can't afford it. And my response is, you can't afford not to, because you actually can get. You can get a fee-only advisor. You can get a financial plan created for you, and it's often much, much, much cheaper than people think. You can pay on an hourly basis for consultative help, and it's just guidance to kind of get you started or to help you stay on track. So I personally think that everybody should have a financial advisor. Certainly every working adult should have someone in their corner to help them to keep on track. I might say one last quick thing, too, about professionals. It's the way in which financial stress doesn't just affect us as individuals or as, you know, part of a couple if you're in a relationship. It actually has a huge impact on America as a whole and in particular on the workforce, because people who are financially stressed are actually costing, from a productivity standpoint, their employers and the labor market billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. And the reason is that financially stressed workers, just like stressed workers of any kind, are typically have higher absentee rates, more accidents on the job. They'll typically tap into employer resources at a higher rate in terms of using certain benefits, whether it's for substance abuse issues, So you can have stress from a whole bunch of issues, from your own personal relationships, from trying to juggle, you know, parental responsibilities if you have aging parents or kids. And employees certainly do tap into those type of benefits that are supplied by their employers. But I think that corporate America has not yet fully awakened to the fact that financial stress is, in fact, the number one stressor for the U.S. workforce. And it's great to have an EAP program, an employee assistance program.
And we'll leave it there, Lynette. Thanks to Lynette Calfani-Cox for joining us today, talking about a new survey on financial stress. She is the CEO and co-founder of themoneycoach.net, a former financial news journalist, author of a lot of books on money matters.